Hey listeners, how you doing? You look well. I like what you've done with your hair. It's your host, Aisha. You're about to hear my chat with Richard Sherbo about classical music and cartoons. And if you like to hear me cackle and the sound of Elmer Fudd's voice, you are going to love this episode. It actually kind of turned out to be both a history lesson and just a really good time wrapped up in one. Also, don't forget to subscribe to, rate us, and review us on iTunes, because every time you do, it's like a little high five to us from across the internet. All right, enjoy the episode. My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark secret. I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock. And I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, but I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know. And then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. Talking to me today is Richard Sherbo, who's actually been on the program before, but we'll talk about that more later. He's coming to us all the way from WAMU, home of the Diane Rehm Show. Richard is a conductor, teacher, and arts administrator. Among the many things that Richard is busy doing, he's also the director of the National Orchestral Institute and Festival. He is the founder and artistic director of the DC-based and Grammy-nominated Enscape Chamber Orchestra, who... That's why he was on the Classical Classroom before. Richard, welcome back to the Classical Classroom.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks.
So what are we going to be talking about today?
So thanks to the wonderful world of Twitter, we kind of stumbled upon this idea of putting together a show about classical music and Looney Tunes cartoons. And so I've had a lot of fun the last couple of days watching tons of Looney Tunes cartoons, which I haven't done in years. And I kind of forgot just how much classical music there was in these things.
Right?
And I remember loving Looney Tunes when I was a kid, probably even before I was even involved in music. I was watching these cartoons. And so it kind of really took me back a little bit to think about all these portrayals of orchestras and conductors and instrumentalists. It's a really interesting world in these cartoons.
Yeah, that's, I think, for a lot of us, our first introductions to classical music were through Looney Tunes, especially for those of us who didn't like sort of get raised in a classical music environment. Can you tell us something about the history of classical music being used to score Looney Tunes?
What I found out about, and there's a lot that's been written about this. So any of your listeners that really want to dive in deep, there's a great book called Tunes in Tunes or something like that by Daniel Goldmark, and it talks all about classical music and the scoring of these cartoons. But really, the tradition of scoring Looney Tunes came out of the tradition of theater organ music in silent films.
Oh.
And so one of the folks that we'll be talking about today, Carl Stalling, who's really one of the best and most admired musicians that scored Looney Tunes and worked for Warner Brothers, came out of this tradition of playing theater organ accompanying silent films and then even conducting orchestras to silent films. And so these organists had at their disposal sort of hundreds, if not thousands, of various tunes cataloged by happy, sad, fast, slow, crying, you know, all these different things that they could just sort of pull upon in the moment to attach to the scene that was happening on the film.
Yeah.
And of course, many of them were also great improvisers, so they could take this music and extend it for bits and pieces of time to really cover the action. But there was this sense of needing great timing as well. So I think that's something that really went into scoring these cartoons really well, is sort of being able to match the music perfectly and sort of hit comedic moments right on their head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's really fun, listening to some of this music. You think, oh, I never really heard the Barber of Seville that way, and I'm not sure I ever will again.
Like, what time period are we talking about? I saw something about the 40s when I was just kind of happened to be looking online, but is that about when?
Yeah, so silent films were earlier than that. And in the 30s and 40s, I think most of this really came into its heyday. You know, Disney, there were a number of different studios working in competition with each other. Disney, Walt Disney, of course, being one of the biggest, Warner Brothers with their cartoon shorts, and MGM Studios and a number of other smaller names. But, you know, MGM had Tom and Jerry, and and Disney had Silly Symphonies and Mickey Mouse, of course. And from that actually grew the probably one of the biggest, we could have a whole show on just Fantasia, right? The movie from 1940. Yeah. But that sort of really was a huge moment for classical music in cartoons, and actually very different than the music that we're talking about today, because in Fantasia, they really took nearly complete pieces or whole movements and really made a very artistic statement with that music. Whereas in Looney Tunes, you're hearing like bits and pieces of, you know, Smetana's Overture to the Bartered Bride lined up with Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner, right? So you just hear like bits and pieces of this music that's so immediate and kind of gets in your subconscious a little bit.
So I was thinking about like why classical music. It was just part of why I was trying to get a handle on when in American history this took place. Because, I mean, there were other genres of music that they you know, could have been pulling from. But do you think that it was something about classical music in particular? Or do you think that classical music being used in these cartoons was indicative of the sort of larger population's relationship to classical music at that time? Like, was it just part of people's lives?
Yeah, I think there were a couple things happening. For this music to be very effective in cartoons, it had to be part of the cultural milieu of that time, right?
Yeah.
So people had to understand the music or have some relationship to it to know how it was being used and if it was being used in a funny way or in a mocking way or in a, you know, sarcastic way. Mm-hmm. I also think that from some of the reading I've been doing about Walt Disney, you know, they used a lot of classical music because it was actually royalty free. So using Strauss waltzes in the 1930s, they didn't have to pay ASCAP and these other publishing firms rights to use the music. Whereas Warner Brothers, actually, they owned a lot of music and they also represented popular music artists and arrangers, and they were actually publishers as well for a while. So interestingly, Warner Brothers had for a while a requirement that all cartoons utilize music from other artists in their catalogs so that they were sort of making profit and helping promote their own stable of artists, which I thought was actually really kind of clever. So when you go back and watch, especially some of the Warner Brothers cartoons from the 30s, you'll hear, oh, there's this popular song, and we may not even know it is popular now, but it may have been popular in the 20s and it was still copyrighted. And so they're making, sort of promoting their own artists through these cartoon shorts.
Yeah. And it works out so well. You know, whatever the initial reason for scoring cartoons with classical music, there's something about having the serious music. It's music that takes itself seriously, I should say, and then juxtaposing it with like the funny or ridiculous. Well, we've talked a lot about this. I feel like we should actually hear some examples of this music. So where should we go first?
So this is a really tough question. I think I would love to jump actually to two clips. One is Dance of the Comedians. So this is the overture to Smetana's Bartered Bride. I want to hear just a little bit of this, and then we're going to go to some clips from Zoom and Board, which is a cartoon with Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner, and we can hear how those two mash up together.
Okay, cool. It just automatically
sounds like a Roadrunner.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Works so well.
If we can go to the clip Zoom and Board, and Just to give a little bit of a setup here, so I think most people are familiar with Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. The Roadrunner is always running or outsmarting the coyote who is trying to trap and eat the Roadrunner. So this comes near the end of this cartoon clip, and after a number of different attempts to catch the Roadrunner, Wile E. Coyote settles upon a harpoon gun that he has pointed at the Roadrunner, but he doesn't realize that at the end of the harpoon, the rope is also wrapped around his foot. So this is sort of the last scene. It's kind of an extended scene, but you'll hear a little bit of setup for the as he's pointing and aiming the harpoon gun, and then you'll hear in the scoring the moment when Wile E. Coyote looks behind him and realizes that his foot is wrapped around the rope, and then off we go. So this is from Zoom and Board.
Okay.
It is. So once the dance of the comedians start, he's being dragged through all different sorts of automobiles and tunnels and across the desert landscape, and they use the dance of the comedians to sort of represent that chase. This comes from a really cool album called the Carl Stalling Project. So Carl Stalling was the musician I mentioned at the beginning who put together most of the music for the Warner Brothers cartoons. Mm-hmm. And in the 1990s or so, they went back and found a lot of this music and put it together on two different albums. So there's it's a great treasure trove of fun things to listen to.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to this. I was thinking, this is kind of like they're making a music video for classical music in a way, telling the story of what's going on in the music in this way.
And one thing to remember is that they were producing these sorts of short films once a week. And so the orchestra, there's some photos in the CD jacket, they were having to line up the orchestral music, rearrange it. So what we just heard, the thematic elements of Dance of the Comedians, but it wasn't exactly that music, right? So they had to sort of rearrange it. And Carl Stalling worked with an arranger, Milt Franklin, who he worked with for many years, who would actually do the orchestration and the arranging once the storyboard was set. But to create this sort of every week, it was almost like J.S. Bach style of having to create so much music on a regular basis.
Yeah, wow. That is unbelievable. So they would draw and produce the cartoon itself. And then they would take the music and score. Oh my God. That's an amazing amount of work.
Yeah. So what they would do is the director of the cartoon would create the storyboard of the moments and sort of have the highlights mapped out, and not, they had special animators that illustrators that would actually fill in all the intervening moments. So their head animators would draw the climactic or sort of major points, and then they'd have other people fill them in. But when the storyboard was set, then Carl Stalling would come in and talk with the director about what sort of tempo was going to be established, how much time between these different sequences, and then he could actually score the cartoon without even looking at the final product. He would just know how many counts or how much time would elapse between sort of the shooting of the gun of the Roadrunner to when he falls off the cliff, and he could sort of align all of the music in advance. It's really pretty fascinating. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to just watch all of this go on a weekly basis.
Oh my gosh. And it just occurred to me, when I saw stuff like this, I was seeing it on Saturday morning cartoons, sort of handily put together so you could see it in a half hour chunk of a succession of these. But when these initially came out, how were people seeing them? Where were they seeing them?
So my understanding, and I guess I should add in here a little bit of a caveat, there's tons of scholarship that's been done on this sort of cartoon music, and I'm by no means a published expert on it, but these cartoon shorts would appear weekly at movie houses sort of in between while they were changing reels, or just sort of little pieces of sorbet, I guess you could say, between the main feature.
Yeah. Interesting.
So they have 8 minutes. They're all, you know, all these cartoons are about 6 to 8 minutes long, which is interesting as well.
Yeah. So this incredible amount of work done for something that was, you know, for better or worse, filler between what people actually came to see.
It was really lost. Wow. I mean, a lot of it was kind of lost, and these folks who put together these two CDs of Carl Stalling's music, it's really, really fun.
Yeah. Well, let's hear some more of the music,
actually. Yeah, let's hear some more music. So a piece that sort of provided endless amounts of humor over many different cartoons is Franz Liszt's Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2. And it would be great if we could hear a little bit of the original music for the Hungarian Rhapsody.
Okay.
Piece builds more and more, right?
Yeah.
It gets more and more dramatic as it keeps going. Is it possible to hear the cartoon version of this from Rhapsody and Rivets? This is a really great cartoon. They're building a skyscraper, and the foreman of the skyscraper, the foreman of the construction site, walks out with his blueprints, just as a conductor walks out to the podium, and he lays the blueprints down on the desk at the job site, and then directs all of the construction workers as if they were orchestra members.
That's awesome.
And it's really cool. So this is from Rhapsody and Rivets. This is where one of the construction workers doesn't respond. They keep repeating the... So you can hear they've changed the tempo just a little bit to sort of help the story move along a little bit further.
Yeah. It's got a little more oompa to it, a little more bounce.
It does.
Yeah. And obviously the instrumentation, yeah.
It's obviously people hammering on the, yeah.
Yeah.
So what's really neat is how they take and also add in little sound effects throughout all of these like that. Some hammering, something just fell down.
Yeah.
So they add in obviously different sound effects that would be occurring in the scene over top of these pieces. It kind of reminds me of the old radio shows, the non-musical radio shows where you hear, you have the guy with all the table full of like car horns and the door that opens, and they can just sort of add in sound effects throughout.
I was just thinking, like they really take a lot of liberties with this music in these cartoons. Was anyone upset about this? I mean,
I think this is one of the benefits of using royalty-free music. The composers were often dead by this point, right. So no one could really get them in trouble, or no one could really file a suit against them for altering their music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of the other things that I noticed time and time again is how often the cartoons also made fun of orchestras and conductors. So, Looney Tunes really took this sarcastic or almost, poking fun at the rigid tradition of classical music and orchestras, which we're still performing in tuxedos and still have a lot of that culture in our concert hall now. But even in the 1940s, they were making fun of the sort of highbrow art of classical music.
Yeah.
And I think also you see a lot of parodies of Fantasia as well. So you see making fun of the fact that, at the beginning of Fantasia, Leopold Stokowski walks out in this sort of shadowy-like figure and ascends the podium of the Philadelphia Orchestra and begins conducting. And so a number of different cartoons start with Bugs Bunny or Elmer Fudd or someone else walking out on stage with the same sort of gravitas. But then, of course, funny things ensue.
Right, there's the tapping of the baton on the...
Right, or the breaking of the baton, or people falling into the tuba, things like that.
But it's like it kind of works both ways. It's like the, having those two things juxtaposed. It's like it brings out the funniness that actually is in classical music, and it brings out the seriousness that's in the comedy too, because often those cartoons were commenting on social norms or mm-hmm. Things like that, and kind of having that, I think it just created an interesting relationship creatively.
There's been a lot of thought put into analyzing how popular music is then represented in cartoons. So classical music being represented by white men predominantly in the 1940s, but then whenever African-American black figure appears in the cartoon using jazz music or ragtime music, I mean, this is sort of an element of how they used music at that time to sort of play off of racial stereotypes.
Yeah.
So you have the seriousness of the concert hall and the conductor, but sort of in a global way, you have them poking fun at just classical music and its own silliness or its use in humorous settings. I think it's kind of a highbrow, like cartoon animators poking fun at just the whole genre in general.
Yeah. I mean, like on the one hand, they're making fun of it. On the other hand, they're bringing it to life in this great new way, and making it relevant for a whole, for like movie house audiences that may not be that familiar.
Imagine being a kid at that time in the 1940s, being 5 years old in the movie theater and hearing this. I think you'd have a much different appreciation for it.
Yeah.
Maybe not better or worse than we do, but you'd come at it knowing that orchestral music was a little bit more part of the American vernacular probably at that point than it is currently.
So something that we haven't talked about, and I actually don't know if we have the music to this or not, whenever I think of cartoons and classical music, what immediately comes to mind is Kill the Wabbit. So, which is from Wagner's Rite of the Valkyries.
Right.
And I mean, I feel like we have to hear that.
Wagner was a huge composer that they chose to parody quite often.
Yeah.
Like Elmer Fudd a little bit there. They parodied Wagner quite a bit. I think Wagner again represented this like the highest of high art in a way, and so they were really sort of attacking it. And to take Elmer Fudd and place him in the middle of Wagner operas, quite funny actually. I think what's interesting is music of that same time period was not as immediately usable for cartoons. So you don't hear Anton Bruckner in any cartoons. You don't hear Gustav Mahler being performed in cartoon music. So what is it about Wagner's music? What is it about Rossini's music? What is it about Johann Strauss that sort of made it more immediate? I think it just has perhaps a more tuneful quality to it.
Yeah. Well, and it's melodramatic. I mean, it's just like tailor-made. It's almost like Wagner set himself up for this. You know?
Yeah, right.
He took himself so seriously.
Oh my gosh, he'd be hating this.
Yeah.
He'd be hating it.
Yeah. Okay, and now I think we have to hear Kill the Wabbit.
Great.
Wabbit wax. Kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit. Kill the wabbit.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So I guess if we want to hear one more fun excerpt, we could go to this great example of usage of classical music, and the title of this one's called A Corny Concerto.
Okay.
And it's another parody of Walt Disney's Fantasia, and this uses music from Johann Strauss' Tales from the Vienna Woods, one of his famous waltzes, in the beautiful Blue Danube as well. And since I think it would actually be great to just hear the clip of the cartoon, because we can, I think we'll recognize right away how the music's been changed.
Okay.
So to set this up a little bit, in the first part of A Corny Concerto, we see what looks to be Carnegie Hall from the outside. So a little bit of Tchaikovsky's first piano concerto there.
Uh-huh. Tchaikovsky also ripe for being made fun of because he's so earnest.
And so grand.
Yeah.
The orchestra tuning. Elmer Fudd walks and ascends the podium and introduces the first segment.
Greetings, music lovers. First, we will hear a waltz written by Johann Strauss. And as we hear the rhythmic strains of the haunting refrain, listen to the whip-wing rhythm of the woodwinds as it rolls a wound and a wound, and it comes out here.
During that whole scene, his tuxedo is falling apart in various humorous ways. And in this whole segment, Porky Pig is hunting the rabbit, uh-huh. Bugs Bunny. And Porky Pig is carrying a hunting rifle and is followed by a sniffing dog. And they're searching for Bugs Bunny. And I'll tell you a little bit more as it goes along. So in addition to the sound effects, they actually rescored the music. So this isn't just the waltz taken right from Johann Strauss, but, you know, there was no xylophone in Johann Strauss, but they added sort of little motifs in the xylophone as well to enhance the character.
It's great to just hear this and not see it.
It is. You can sort of just imagine what's going on. If you set up the scene in the right way, you can just picture what's going on. So the gun just fires, and now all three, Porky Pig, the dog, and Bugs Bunny, are trying to figure out if they were shot with the gun. And one by one, Porky Pig emerges, and he's holding his heart and realizes, oh, not me, I didn't get shot. Now the dog appears and is doing the same thing. And Bugs Bunny? And now Bugs Bunny realizes he's dead, and the Porky Pig and the dog are crying for his... because they're so sad.
Oh my god. Awesome.
That's great.
Wasn't that lovely? And now we will present the beautiful Blue Danube.
I totally remember this episode too.
It's really funny how the Bugs Bunny moves in and out of different characters. He starts off as a rabbit, uh-huh. and then he becomes a ballerina, and then at the very end, he becomes a ballerina again. And all of these things went by so quickly when you're a kid. It reminds me of how cartoons operate on different levels for different audiences as well. So folks that really understand and knew these classical pieces, maybe the adults in the theater, understood these at one level and the kids at a different level. It reminds me of Family Guy, you know, or some of the cartoons now, how, you know, The Simpsons, when you watch them and you think, oh, these kids in elementary school or middle school are watching Family Guy, and yet I can sit down and watch Family Guy and get a whole different, you know, variety of jokes that come out of that
exactly.
cartoon series.
Yeah, Bob's Burgers comes to mind. That's a great mm-hmm. one. Yeah, and even The Simpsons still, like, so much... You can watch it from so many different sort of angles.
Well, and, you know, Family Guy is a great example of, you know, Seth MacFarlane is just a musical genius in his own right. Mm-hmm. And what he's done to incorporate Broadway mostly throughout almost throughout the whole series. For if you really know different Broadway shows, and I'm not up on all of that, but I've sat and watched Family Guy with people that are, and they really get all of these jokes making fun of different Broadway shows.
And the South Park guys, how they've utilized music, and they've actually gone on to do a musical of their own, The Book of Mormon, which is amazing. Well, Richard Sherbo, thank you so much for coming back to the Classical Classroom. This has been great. And everybody, if you enjoyed this episode with Richard, you should go and listen to his other episode, which he did all about Inscape Chamber Orchestra and their work. So, but anyway, Richard, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
All right, everyone, that does it for this episode of Classical Classroom. Yep. That's all, folks. Go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom for more classroom. Follow us on social media. You can find the links on that webpage. You can email me at dclay@houstonpublicmedia.org. Subscribe to us, rate us, and review us on iTunes. Every time we get a new review, we say, woo! Thanks today to audio producer Mark the Martian DiClaudio for twiddling knobs while producer Todd was on vacation. Thanks also to editor Mark DiClaudio for his piercing Pepe Le Pew eyes. Thanks to Richard Sherbo for being here today. Thanks to me for saying words. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.